Welcome to the Modern Woodworkers Association, a podcast about woodworking from folk who woodwork. Woodworking is what we do, who we are, and what we like to talk about. So join us as we have a drink, sit around, and talk woodworking.
Hi, and welcome to episode 157 of the Modern Woodworkers Association podcast. I am Sean Mosniewski of the Corner Workshop, and I'm here with my co-host, Diami Plotke of the Penultimate Woodshop.
Hello, Diami. Sean.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing all right. A little out of it tonight, but I'm doing fine.
That's okay. It happens every once in a while. So, what's new? What you got going on?
Well, as we were just discussing in the pre-show, there's a project that I should have started tonight, and only when I walked in the shop to set up my computer for this recording did I realize that I had completely spaced out and not done it.
What is said project?
Said project is a cane for my son. Now, as we record this, we are about a week before Halloween. Mm-hmm. I think 6 days before Halloween, something like that. And my youngest son, as any current, you know, in the culture 9-year-old does, wants to be a newsie for Halloween.
You know, sure.
Not
like
not
the
just,
Broadway show newsie or just the tilted hat, dirty street kid selling newspapers.
Oh, no. The Broadway show newsie.
Okay. I like it. I like it. I approve.
And not just any of the newsies, but the newsie who walks on a crutch. So he needs an old-fashioned newsie crutch, which, based on the pictures I've been able to find on the interwebs, is essentially a long dowel with kind of a U-shape piece at the top that fits in the armpit, and then this little like stub handle coming out at about hand height so he can pick it up and move it. It's not like a traditional crutch now where it comes up into a Y. It's just a single pole that goes up with a handle sticking out the side.
But it's like a little Timmy Cratchit.
Exactly. That's
thing.
Exactly
yeah.
What it looks like. I suspect that more people will recognize him as Tiny Tim than as
Tiny
a
Tim. Yeah.
but we went to we had a Cub Scout pack night last night. It was the Halloween pack night. And he didn't have the cane, but other than that he was in his costume. And as we first walk in the building, the Scoutmaster congratulated him on a great newsy costume and actually got it without me saying anything. And mm-hmm. that went well. So we'll see.
That's one of those things where the people that know will love it. And everyone that has no clue will be asking a lot of questions.
Exactly. But I was kicking around how to make this thing. And I ran down to my local blue box store.
Mm-hmm.
And I found some dowels that I could have used, but the biggest dowel they had a spot on the shelf for 1.5-inch diameter dowels. The biggest dowel they actually had was 1-inch. And as I played with it and flexed it, I don't know, it didn't strike me as quite strong enough. And it struck me as the joinery for the handle on the top wasn't going to be as strong as I might have liked and was going to be a little bit of a pain in the butt to do.
So I have an idea.
Okay.
If I'm envisioning it correctly. Do you have a Michaels?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And you may even be able to do the hook part out of like a foam hoop that you cut. The part that goes under his arm. Because it just has to be kind of semi-circular, right?
Mm-hmm.
So either a wood or a foam circle of given diameter with a given thickness. And then a dowel, I would think like a 1-inch dowel would be okay, as long as he understands, especially if you make part of it foam, that he's not to lean on it too hard.
Mm-hmm.
But then all you got to do is take the dowel to a drill press and cut out the diameter of the hoop so that it's going to nestle in there. And then you cut that hoop in half and you got a U on top and you got a crank or a crook to hang on.
That is a very good method that if I hadn't already made my mind up, I would consider.
Damn. Because it doesn't have to be like a T-joint. You can actually nestle it in there, and it's going to be a little more. And even if it's wood, if it's all wood, you could do it that way too, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Well,
but the foam may be easier to find in the given dimension. I don't know, because otherwise I don't know how you're going to bend something. Or you're trying to cut it out of a 6-inch board and just carve
what
it.
What I decided I was going to do, because bear in mind, the only standard that I'm looking to meet is the one that's in my head.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, like me. I have one in my head, and that's what I'm going with.
Exactly. But my standard is going to be way out there, because what I plan to do is take two sheets of, I guess it's half-inch plywood I have, two rips of plywood, and cut them into the rough shapes, and then glue them all up so that there's essentially half laps. So one side will come all the way up, the other side will come up about halfway, then there'll be a cross piece glued in that'll be half the handle, then it'll continue up, and then the other side of the handle will get glued in, so they're all kind of like bricked together as it gets glued up.
Right.
And then that was my plan, was tonight to cut that all up and glue it up. And as all I'm staring at right now is two sheets of plywood. I'm thinking that's somewhere in the ballpark of a half hour, an hour to get that, you know, do the little bit of layout I have to do, cut it all up and glue it up. And then from there, I was going to take it to the bandsaw, and then I was going to power carve it, make it round.
Yep. Yep. I figured power carving was in there. I mean, that's it. I'm eager to see how it turns out.
Me too. I'm eager to see if it turns out.
If it turns out.
We're going on Saturday night. We're going to my sister's Halloween party, and that's when we're hoping to have it done. So we shall see.
All right.
I have Boy Scouts tomorrow night. I know that the podcast is the appropriate time to discuss my evening activities, but it's going to be tight. I don't know. I really don't know when I'm going to have time to do this, but
does everyone need something made for their costume, or is this the only one?
That is the only thing that needs to be made for the costume.
Okay. That's good.
I bought the thin black tie I needed for my other son's costume came via Amazon today. And other than that, we're all set.
Good. And can I ask what he's going as?
He is going as a Mormon.
That's awesome. That's not obscure at all.
not in our house, it isn't.
Nope. That's fantastic.
They have caught my wife's love of Broadway musicals and
Book of Mormon
and lack of music. Ability to hold a tune.
Oh, wow. Really?
Oh yeah.
That is odd.
She'll be the first to tell you she is an absolutely horrible singer, but she loves to sing, and the children are the exact same way.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. To each their own. There's a lot of things I suck at that I like to do. So I don't.
Yeah, sure. Sure. Since last we spoke, I completed the Chicago Marathon, which is all fun and good.
Congratulations.
Thank you. While we were there, we saw Hamilton. So that's right up the musical alley. Mm. Tell your wife and kids.
No, I can't, because awesome, they'd want to come.
Yeah. You're at least close to Broadway. It's pretty awesome. But then work in the room extension has continued. The closet door is finished and the door is hung. I bought trim and some stain for not the trim, because the trim is oak just like the door was. That's fine and good. But the window and the entry door are clear pine that I'm going to attempt to stain to look like oak, which... Okay. I'm struggling with, but
why? Why are you struggling? Why are you trying to make pine look like oak?
Well, I'm not going to get exactly to look like that, but it's basically, especially with the, so the door is a pass by like barn style door. Our hardware's on the outside, and so it's going to go right past the door. It's not a pocket door. It's not a hinge door, right? So it just slides away. And for that reason, that opening to the room is a, not even a cased opening. It is a drywalled hole in the wall.
Okay, well, hold on a second. Hold on. So
go on.
It's a barn door, so it slides on a track, like on the face of the wall, not into a pocket.
Correct.
And this is your son's bedroom?
Yes.
Does that provide enough privacy for a bedroom?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't have a problem with it.
You know what? I don't have to sleep in there either, so I'm okay.
And it, seriously, the thought came up, hey, he can't lock the door. He can't slam the door. He can't. It's perfect as he's going through his teenage years.
Or.
I know where you're going, and I don't care.
Okay. No, that's fine. As a parent of teenage boys, there are times when I like to close the door. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we'll see. Honestly, it's I could retrofit a door into the hole without doing too much because it's framed big enough. But for right now, we're trying this.
Okay.
It seems like a weird thing to try, but no, it'll be fun.
So okay. So
anyway, so that door, but also the windows we got are aluminum clad outside, but clear pine inside.
Okay.
And we're trimming everything kind of common to the house in red oak, OG style trim.
Okay, like clamshell stuff. Oh no, OG. So it's kind of colonial, but probably more store bought than colonial.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, it's got what is it? It's got like a flat. It's got a dip. It's got a radius. It's got a shallow, and then another. Yeah, it's got some detail to it.
I'm sure Shannon is turning over in his. Yeah, I would say his grave, but he's far from dead. Shannon is well alive, and I don't know where I'm going with this. I'm digging myself a hole. Shannon, I love you. But
anyway,
in the phrasing of the description of that molding, I was just saying was awkward. That's the point I was trying to make.
Terribly awkward. It's OG, damn it. It's OG trim. If you look it up, Lowe's has it. All the box stores have it. Okay. It's OG trim.
Okay, so the door and your trim is actual oak, and you need the windows to match. And the I can appreciate you're not rebuilding the windows out of a different wood.
Yes, I'm not. So I can't do that. So I'm trying to not have a light brown, dark brown right next to each other on the windows. So,
the windows are being trimmed in oak trim.
Yes.
What? The window trim does not directly touch any other trim. Is that right?
No.
Am I overthinking this by saying, what if you trim the windows in pine and then when you dye or stain the windows, at least the windows and the window trim will match even if they're slightly different than the rest of the trim? You won't have so different trims touching.
That's the only thing, because like in where the closet door is next to the window, it's a solid oak door that's just like clear poly finished. So it's pretty clean red oak.
Okay. That's the one we discussed a show or two.
We discussed probably last time, yeah. And within 2 feet of that is one of these windows. Mm-hmm. And so I don't want to have that contrast necessarily. Okay.
All right,
so
that makes sense.
I'm trying, and basically, and I'm not going fancy with it, and I'm not shooting for perfection. I'm actually just using poly. What is it?
Poly shades.
Poly shades. Yeah, poly shades, and just I'm on like the fourth coat, and that stuff takes forever to dry.
Now that's a stain and a polyurethane finish in one, correct?
Correct.
So the more coats of finish you put on.
It just gets darker.
The darker it gets. And then I guess once you're at the right color, you switch over to regular polyurethane?
Yeah. Actually, by my dad's suggestion, I'm going to finish it in spar varnish for UV protection.
Okay.
And I just said, okay, Dad, sure.
Be careful with the spar varnish. I've only ever used it once, and I did. Mm-hmm. I used the Minwax, which I'm sure is not the best quality spar varnish.
Mm-hmm.
But I found it to be very thick to work with. Like,
was it really
it was harder? I'm a decent brush worker, I guess I'll say. I'm a decent brusher. and I'm very familiar with the consistency of polyurethane, and I can brush it on with very, very minimal brush marks. But the spar varnish brush marked like nobody's business. It was thicker.
I think
he
mentioned thinning it with naphtha.
That's probably a good idea.
So, and yeah, and it will be an absolute top coat. So I'm not trying to put a thick finish of any sort on it. I just want to seal it. Even though the poly shades is enough. It's a poly finish anyway, and I could just and I've got poly too. I could just clear poly it. But
you might want to just do a sample too, because while I think the spar varnish will look like the poly once it dries, you want to make sure that it doesn't look different.
Yep. Actually, that's a good idea, and I haven't done it, but I've got some just pine scrap down here that I should put through the same paces on the door, on one side of the door. So far, I think I've got 4 applications of the poly shade, and it's getting darker. So I'm at the point of questioning it, because I'm looking and I'm terrible with colors. But a pine obviously is not oak, red oak. And so I'm looking at the door in the same room. These are on sawhorses in the same room. I'm doing it all inside. And I'm looking at it and going, yeah, it's getting darker, but there's some orange or there's some brown in there. So I'm toying with the idea, like, what if I get some pecan or even walnut color and add a coat of that and then add yellow on top of that, or, you know, like trying to I'm too deep into the one side of the door to make too much difference right now. But
and this is a 6-panel door?
No, this is a funky door. It is a 5-glass window door. Oh. It has frosted glass panes in a rectangular pattern.
With like an OG around the frame?
Not even, no, square. Okay. It's really simply done. I almost said cheaply. It wasn't cheap, but it's a pretty simple frame. Basically just a Morrison tenon frame with glass held in with little whatever you put in on the edge of glass to hold it in.
Right.
There's like little quarter by quarter strips.
I was just thinking the difficulty of getting the finish off if you end up
in
that worst case scenario.
Yeah, worst case, I mean it's solid wood, so I could sand it down.
But it sounds like you should probably stop and pull out another pine board and get it up to where you are now in the door
and then figure out what that takes. Yeah.
That door is not what I would want to be experimenting on.
Yeah. Worst case, it just stays like what I've got it. You know, my wife and kid don't care. It's more my pickiness. But anyway, so that's it's tricky, and I want to, I don't know. I'm happy with the application so far.
Okay.
I'm keeping it very smooth and even, and now it's a matter of color matching. And I am very to say that I've done the door. I haven't touched the windows yet. I just actually masked the glass today and sanded them.
Okay.
And I'm just getting to the point of applying to that.
They're double hungs?
They're double hungs. It's going
to
be a pain
in the ass.
You take
the sashes out to paint them?
Yeah, except it's actually getting below 30 degrees tonight here. Yeah. And this is an interior room of the house.
Close your sliding door and finish them in the...
That sliding door is gone.
The barn door,
barn door, that's not hung yet.
Oh. Tape some plastic over the doorway.
Well, it is plasticed.
All right, then just bring them in the house.
Yeah,
you can't
maybe
finish a sash in place. Come on.
I know. I'm going to try my damnedest. I literally, like, I looked at it and went, man, you know what? I could do the frame of it now. I could trim it. He could move in and I could take those out in the spring and I could finish them.
That's a viable plan.
It really is.
Or you know what? In a few years, he'll be away in college. You could finish it then too.
Yeah, that's my problem. I don't want to put it off any more than I have to. And this is like, so we have the flooring. It's all in place and like, well, not installed yet. I'm waiting to finish all this finishing before I install the floor. Mm-hmm. And then the room is all but livable. We got electric in. Didn't mention that. That was a big step. So
well,
I actually
have. I assumed you put the electric in first. Why?
Well, No. So it was all run through conduit.
Oh, okay. You roughed it in before you just actually connected stuff.
It was roughed in. Everything was painted before, because my dad did it. He's a licensed electrician. Before any of the plugs and outlets were put in, the wires were pulled, but they weren't live. And then he made the final connections once we were painted.
Okay.
So that's kind of happened in the last week, or well, 2 weeks ago, actually, at this point. But it's nice because that was like the previous work I was dealing with a shop light I took out of literally off the ceiling in my shop, and I leaned it up against the wall in there, and that was my light for the room. Now I have a ceiling fan with a light above head, which is much better. But it's coming along nicely.
Excellent. Sounds like you're approaching the end.
Yeah, we'll see. Maybe by Christmas. Maybe.
The problem is you ruined your son. What you should have given him for Christmas was a door.
I think we already, for his birthday and Christmas, we're giving him a room.
When I was like 14, I got a door for Christmas.
Did you really?
I did.
Wow.
My sister too. Neither one of us had doors in our rooms.
Wow. That's a big upgrade. My uncle one time gave me a case of motor oil. So, whatever.
Yeah, and I don't mean to suggest that we lived in squalor. Like, my dad had been in the house for about a year, and it was this 100-year-old colonial that he gutted, and he just hadn't gotten to putting doors in. Like, we had these rough openings with no trim. But anyway.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, so there's a ton of stuff going on, and we got to bring it all up, if I may, quickly. Fine Woodworking is still having their Veritas giveaway as we record this. I don't know how long it goes, but the drawing is in the middle of November.
Oh, I thought you'd won already.
I hope to win, but they have not. They won't announce until the 17th or something of November. So there's some time. I checked it tonight as we record this. It's still live. Also, and this is in the show notes that we also often put out there. But if you don't find our show notes, just look for them. A previous guest, James Wright, who loves doing stuff by hand, decided that he'd put in 400 square feet of white oak flooring by hand. And it's not at all how I'm going to do my flooring, but it was pretty interesting to watch. And he makes a good point at the very beginning of it, is that it's really only been the last 20 or 30, maybe even 40 years that pneumatic tools have been used to lay flooring. So any old house that had flooring from the 50s, 60s, or before was probably done by hand, where, you know, you're pre-drilling or using cut nails to nail down tongue and groove flooring, which is kind of funny. But yeah.
Having put down my fair share of flooring.
Have you?
Oh, yeah, I have.
Okay.
My choice would not be to do it by hand. Ever.
Ever. I agree.
But that being said, I reject the argument that because it used to be done this way, it's okay to still do it this way.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, that being said, James is the coolest crazy person I know.
Yep.
And more power to him. Like, it's a really cool project.
Yeah.
It inspires me to go out and buy a pneumatic flooring nailer so that I never have to bother renting one again.
You know what precluded me from buying one? The sheer price tag.
Oh, yeah. They're not one of those expensive things.
They are. It's like, and you know what? I haven't looked into renting one yet because I'm not quite to that step, but I'm assuming I can rent one and get my project done for less than the $400 tag days to get a cheap one.
I've rented, you know? Every time I've had to do a floor, I rent one, and I couldn't $70, $80 for the day, something like that. Like,
yeah.
And the floor, quite frankly, floors go down pretty darn quickly.
Yeah. And
when
and this
you're
one,
using a pneumatic gun and not cutting them by hand. But again, I say all that kind of despairingly, but I'm not looking to disparage the way James did it, because it's his thing, and he enjoys it, and more power to him. I mean, it's an absolutely viable way to do it. When it's all said and done, it's going to be a beautiful floor. So, listening to him describe it on the Crafted podcast that he's on with Johnny and Zach,
mm-hmm.
this part that had me questioning it is, I believe it's his plan to plane them and not sand them.
Oh no, he already finished them. I don't know if he planed them. He's already got water locks on him.
Yeah,
at this point,
and
that's crazy.
That's like doing it by hand. Wonderful. He got a kick out of it. It's going to hold up, and he's absolutely right. That's how it was done.
Mm-hmm.
More power to him. Planing it versus sanding it. Sanding it is a lot of work. Planing it just seems like so much more work.
Have you ever seen the floor planes though?
No.
So literally, they were block planes. I don't know how big, but they had a hand, like a long handle, like a kind of a stick handle.
Okay, so you could do it standing up.
That you literally could do it standing up. You could push a plane standing up.
Okay.
I don't know if that he did that, or if he'd get on his hands and knees and swing a plane around. And maybe he was just addressing small spots where, in honestly, planes do a faster, better job than sanding.
Doing small spots, absolutely. But I've never put down a wood floor where you don't need to finish the entire surface. Like,
right.
The nature of wood flooring is it's not just small spots. It's every seam.
Right. So I got pre-finished flooring.
Okay.
And it's also 5-inch wide planks. So less joints in the same space. The same reason when I did my shower, I got 8x10 tiles instead of 4x4 tiles. Less joints, less grout. The way to go. So I don't know. We'll see. But you know, that it's very interesting. It's pretty informative. You know, he just used a little hand drill and set nails. And I mean, it didn't actually seem like it was that big of a pain in the butt. You get closer to the project when you're doing it like that. You know what I mean? Like, you're not stepping on a board and hitting it with a mallet, you know, hitting a pneumatic nailer with a mallet. You're actually getting down, setting that board in, spacing your holes, and then knocking nails in and setting them each. It's just like, it obviously takes longer, but you know, you know more of what's going on at each and every time necessarily. But I thought that was pretty cool. On to my next tidbit. Mm-hmm. Tim Sway and his squares. We talked about the ones I got a couple times ago.
Exactly. Have you killed anyone with it yet? It's so sharp.
I have not stabbed anyone with that very it is really sharp. But he's redesigned it. So it's actually kind of interesting because I don't think he sold more than 100 or so.
Based on listening to him talk on his podcast, because we only talk about other people on podcasts, on Reclaimed Audio, he was discussing how I think he sold 200 of them. I want to say it was the initial pre-sale and now he's doing the pre-sale for the second round, which
yeah, it's kind of cool to see it happening. I'm sure it happens, you know, with a lot of things, but that was basically like a first go and right. He got people's feedback and he's immediately responding and doing it differently. So he's improved it a little bit. And he's also, which was a big thing, made a metric version, which he was waiting on the first time, but now there's obviously a lot of requests. I was almost at backlash, but you know, people saying, hey, you know, metric.
Yeah.
And so he designed a metric one and improved the other one.
The redesign necessary to allow it to make a metric version that are basically the same version with different markings? I thought that was the biggest issue, was that he couldn't figure out, or there wasn't a practical way to make the old design into metric.
I don't know. I would have to, I seriously have mine right here. I don't think he's changed the dimension of it at all. The overall length and height of it. He made a couple changes and they were talked about, but simple stuff like there's a set of lines or holes that go diagonally up from the square corner of it. Mm-hmm. Those are meant to space at quarter, half, three quarter, and 1 inch off the bottom of the thing.
Okay.
So you say you put it on on the edge of something, you can then mark a dot and then you could draw a line. Well, one addition he did, now this isn't metric related, but one addition he did was put a second row of those holes further down. So now you can, from the start, mark two positions. So now all you got to do is slide the flat edge up there and you can draw a line across those points. Pretty useful.
Yeah.
But the, and there were other, there were, it, he had, instead of a radius on one corner, he had a, I don't know if it's a cove in this form, but it's basically an inset radius off the top edge. He removed that and made it a radius top, you know, top left corner, essentially, away from the pointy 45-degree end.
Okay, so that, where it was like a crescent cut into the flat top,
yes.
Now it's set into the corner?
Yes. Now it's not crescent, though. It is rounded.
Okay.
So it's the same radius, but it's drawn over the corner, which kind of makes sense because now you can square up a 90-degree edge to, like on the edge of a board, you could go up, you know, touching each edge, and now you've got a radius that you can trace against, where this was it's a true radius, but figuring out where it started and stopped on a piece
was so,
kind of difficult.
So now the edge of the square is perpendicular to the curve of the cove, whereas before it was just an arc out of the curve and it intersected at some weird obtuse angle.
Yeah, basically. It's something less than hemispherical.
Okay.
So, yeah, you've got like a quadrant of a radius that's cut into it.
If I could summarize this, and you have one, so I want you to confirm
this. Right here.
Tim came up with a really cool, neat, innovative product that now with round two and some revisions, he's turned into an even better, neat, really cool product. And somehow you have ended up with the old antiquated one.
But I'm going to order a new one.
Okay.
So I got two originally, and I'm going to give my dad one of them.
He won't know it's the old one.
Even though it's the old one. I'm going to get myself a new one. But what's cool about what Tim's doing, and he announced this actually today, I saw the video that he announced it. Right now, as we record, is a pre-order that's lasting through the end of October, mm-hmm. Where he's offering the new ones, which have a little more work to them, so they cost a little bit more. He's eating that difference. And right now for the pre-order, you can basically pay the same, I think, $29.95.
Oh, wow. That's very reasonable.
It's very reasonable for a nice piece of
machine. Does that include shipping from Connecticut?
I think that might get you personal delivery. But yes, it does. I believe so.
Wow.
It may not, but it's...
I would hope he's charging shipping on top of that, because that sounds...
Yeah.
That sounds like he's not getting what he deserves for coming up with such a cool product.
I'd have to look at my order from before to see. I probably did pay
but
a little
regardless of whether what shipping costs, you're getting each one hand-wrapped by Tim.
Mm-hmm. Yes, in somebody's, some old newspaper. Or no, it's a cereal box. He uses cereal boxes, which is kind of funny.
He must eat a lot of cereal.
I'm guessing he finds them. But for a short time to kind of gauge interest again, which is very smart of him, this pre-order, same price for a short time. And that also he mentioned, which is kind of cool. He said, I understand all you that got those. I don't want you to feel terrible about it. So I've got all your names, and I'll be giving away some of these new ones as they come in to previous purchasers of version one.
Oh, wow.
So that's kind of neat.
Yeah.
Yeah. So really, if you got one, your chance of getting the new one from Tim, which would be nice.
That's pretty cool. And I'm assuming that if you got an old one, you can still buy a new one.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I because I'm terribly unlucky, I'm just going to buy a new one.
Hey, you wanted a cordless nail gun.
No, you did.
Oh, by default, you did.
True. True. I actually used it. Excellent. I used it to hang my door. I still need to get that back to you.
Hey, well, yeah, I'm in a huge rush.
I know. I'm sure.
Well, when you come out to finish the spackle job that I'm almost done with, you can hand deliver.
Yep. Yep. Perfect. So also in the news, Woodpeckers has what seems to, it used to be, they had a one-time tool, and it wasn't that often. Now it seems like every month they're bringing out a new one-time tool. Mm. Do you feel that way?
They do. I'm not going to say it's every month, but certainly they mm-hmm. always have a one-time tool. So when one closes, they open another one.
Another one
it seems
opens,
like immediately.
Yeah.
Maybe it's a couple weeks later, but it seems like immediately.
I think the first one I got was the Greg Polini square.
Yeah, it's funny. I'm actually holding my Polini pocket rule in my hand right now. I literally just picked it up
one,
to play
yes.
with in my hand.
It's in a drawer over there. I'm pointing to it. But yeah, that was one that I picked up. This one is it's a hole guide. And so it's a grid of, I think, 9 or 16 or 12.
It's 3 by 4, so it's 12.
So 12. So 12 holes, and it comes with a bushing guide, right? So it's basically a plate with holes in it that will drill holes or guide holes.
I'm gonna use the term bore because I don't know which of these is correct. Yeah. I'm just using a term. It's using a router, and you're not mm-hmm. literally just drilling with the router, but with the bearing, you're tracing the bearing inside the hole that's in the plate to essentially route out around to make this smaller hole. And I want to say that by changing the bits or the bearings, by some combination of changing those things, you can make a half inch, some weird millimeter one, or a 3/4 inch hole. Is that right?
I think so. Yeah, I think it's using a half inch router bit, and then the different bushings can create different holes. Obviously, minimum half, maximum. It actually could get pretty big, but the idea is that, and it comes with a couple other things, which is kind of neat. Like, it's not just a grid of holes and bushings to go into. So now, say it's kind of like if you wanted to do, let's say shelf pins. We're talking maybe bigger than what shelf pins would be. Go ahead.
Can I play devil's advocate on this?
Please.
Because while I'll be the first to agree that woodpecker stuff is absolutely phenomenal in terms of its accuracy and its quality. And I have more woodpecker stuff than anyone really has a right to.
yeah.
I'm staring at a wall of red squares and rulers that are hanging across the shop from me. I have a couple of red T-squares. And I was playing with my Pliny pocket rule, which I have two of, because I ordered one for my dad to find out that he bought himself one. So I'll be the first to say that woodpecker's stuff is worth the money. It is just the nicest stuff you can buy. So that's my opinion of woodpeckers. However, the hole boring jig strikes me as a really accurate, expensive way to make tops for an MFT table. And nothing else. And as much as I like Festool, I think the MFT table is a complete and utter waste of money. So
let's
I don't appreciate what good this tool is. I think it's an accurate, expensive way to make something that no one needs.
Beyond MFT tables, you could actually use 1/3 of it to make just a series of dog holes.
Okay. I give you that. However, I have a 3/4-inch spiral upcut blade bit that I use for dog holes. And with a simple piece of plywood and a bandsaw, I was able to make a jig that I believe Glenn Huey talked about in Pop Wood many, many years ago that simply registers to the edge of the bench and it holds the router and you just slide it over, plunge the router down, slide it over, plunge the router down. And while it doesn't plunge through the full depth of a proper workbench.
And very few routers would.
Exactly. It still plunges down, whatever it is, an inch, inch and a half. It's more than enough that when you then follow up with a 3/4-inch auger bit, it guides it, it's accurate, and from the top is this beautiful, perfectly plumb hole. So, yes, this would absolutely do dog holes in a bench. Why would you use this? It's, you know, it's like buying a laser to trim your grass. Like it's such overkill. Frankly, a drill and a square do it just fine. I thought my router method was a little expensive and overkill because I had to buy a 3/4-inch upcut bit. This is like, oh my God, I could do this and put my kids through college.
Yeah. I didn't go to that depth when I saw it, but that's kind of why I brought up the Pollini rule at the beginning. Was I find that useful?
Oh, absolutely.
I found that somewhat intriguing. That it was like, yeah, that has some really nifty tools. You know, it has applications that I have very few other things to do that. I don't need this.
No,
but it's something to look at. It's something to see.
If I needed a jig to make holes so I could produce my own MFT tabletops, this is the jig I would use.
Sure.
but I pulled up the woodpecker's site to take a look at this so I would know what we were talking about, because I did get this email from woodpeckers, but I had forgotten because I just dismissed it as, no, I don't need that. but what I want to talk about, and you don't have this in the show notes, so I'm going a little... I'll make a left turn here, Sean. Is woodpeckers introduced their line of ultra shear wood turning tools?
Oh, they did. And I do want to talk about those.
And for anyone who isn't on the woodpeckers email list, you should get on it because there's some reasonable deals on there, that things that are truly useful. They're essentially they're carbide tipped wood turning tools. So is that Easy Wood Tools? Popularized that style. Yep. I am not familiar with the Easy Wood Tools. I'm in a passing way. I am, but I've never used one. I don't have a.
I have a few.
I don't have a lathe, so yeah, you can speak more to this than I can. But my understanding, having read the marketing material on these ultra shear tools, and I will admit that I think I don't have the room for it, but years ago I would have turned away a lathe. Like, I just had no interest in it. I think I might want a lathe. so I was kind of paying attention to these when they came out. And it seems that they have flats ground on the shank of the tool. So that is it the cross piece you rest them on, what is that called?
The banjo.
Is that the banjo? I thought the banjo was there on the key out, but
the banjo holds the tool rest.
Okay, the tool rest. So the cross piece that you'd rest on the tool rest, the shank of the tool, has flat milled in it, so you can rest it and register it perpendicular, parallel with the tool rest, or at a slight angle. And I couldn't tell you what the angle is, but they say that by resting it at that angle, you get a skew cut, which, at least based on their material, and I apologize if I'm misrepresenting this, that was a first for a carbide tip tool. And I know I've heard criticisms about the carbides that they're much easier to use, but they don't really train you to use actual high-speed steel tools, and the carbide tools have a limiting factor in what they can and can't do. And I think this pushes the ceiling of what you could do with a carbide tip tool much higher, but probably still not to the point of a high-speed steel tool. So they seemed really interesting. And I don't know, I need to get a lathe before I worry about what type of lathe tools I would use. But I'm inclined to think I would probably go carbide, but I don't know.
So this is where I'll jump in. I have used carbide. I actually reached over and I pulled up one of my EasyWood tools.
Okay.
It is the big rougher, I guess. It's got the slight radius, squarish carbide tip on it.
Mm-hmm. It's basically a square tip that has little it's kind of cambered like a plain sole would be.
Yeah, it has a slight camber. Yeah, maybe okay. It's an R4, so I believe it has a 4-inch radius on something that's only a 1/2-inch wide.
Gotcha.
So it's very shallow. But the shaft that holds all this is a roughly 1/2-inch square shaft.
Okay.
That is what, look, I'm using my square to measure this tool. It's a 1/2-inch roughly, 1/2-inch square shaft that you hold on to. Or that it holds the tool, and the given distance is all dependent on the size of the tool. But so I did see that, and I didn't realize it was different kind of facets on the Woodpecker's one. I thought it was a radius actually, but that it's easy to hold it in a skew. I will say, having used this one in my hand with a square, purely square, it's not impossible to roll it and use it on a shear, and I've done it. It doesn't promote that, because now you're not as firmly held down. You're holding on a point instead of an edge.
Okay.
But I actually do want to. I hope I can see woodpeckers somewhere to try them out. I don't want to jump on those away. But
I pulled up the product page now. So, and they talk about how, while carbide inserted tools have been around for a while, what makes their ultra shear is what theirs are called different.
Ultra shear, okay.
They say it's a long list, but the three most important things are the grade of the carbide, the design of the tool shaft, and the material treatment used in making the shaft. So apparently they think the shaft is a big deal.
Yeah.
I'm
eager to see one in person because...
Yeah. Here we go. I'm sorry. After the initial shaping, roll the tool to the right or left, and you'll feel the tool land on another bearing plane on the shaft, 45 degrees from the horizontal.
Yep.
So then you can slice cleanly, leaving a surface that needs little or no sanding. This technique is called scraping. Usually involves trying to balance the tool on a surface, on a round surface or a sharp corner. Ultra Shear's geometry makes the shear scraping a simple approach even beginners can use instead of something that takes years to master.
And that was the criticism of EasyWood Tools when it came out, was this isn't hard enough. I heard that saying this makes it too easy. People won't know what they're doing because the delicacy of using a fluted bowl gouge as opposed to a carbide tip is 100% different. And there's like finesse and there's moving it all around. And the carbide was like, oh no, you just plunge it in and you just move it back and forth and you're good. Cause it's strong enough to hold it and it's robust and it's sharp, it'll hold an edge and all this stuff. That the positive ability to hold a shear, that may be, actually may be very beneficial. And I do like that they're offering right away different sizes. I don't have it in front of me, but they've got like MIDI and
They have full medium. And mid-size ones, and I believe they have like tiny ones for pens.
Yeah. And those are cool for those little MIDI lathes where they're only like 10 inches across, and they really are just for pen turning.
I'll tell you, it looks – I'm sure that they are up to the quality standard of woodpeckers.
Absolutely.
And from this layperson's perspective, where, again, I have never turned myself, so I could be off here, but they seem to be a step up in functionality compared to the other carbide-tipped tools. They look really intriguing to me. And now you're looking at the sizing. So at this point, they only seem to be selling them in sets. Okay. So Ultra Shear, the mid-size, where's the mid-size square? Let's go full size. So the full size with the square tip is $140 for one. The full set being $379 of three. Ooh. Of them.
Is that the different profiles? So square, round, and pointed?
Exactly. So it's the square in, we're talking the full size ones now. The square one is $140. The sheer one, which is the diamond shaped tip, is $140, and the round one is $140. So that's 40 is 12. That's 420. $420 if you bought them individually, and $380 if you buy them as a set. I think that's about what Easywood tools cost. I want to say they're a little over $100 a piece. Is that right? I don't know.
I remember them to be $100 and some. I don't honestly remember.
Yeah.
Because I only got, you know what? Hold on. There may be a price tag on this one. Because I'm like that. No. Oh, wait. Seriously, Woodcraft sold this one for $130. That's a full size. Essentially, they're square.
Okay, so this is $9 more.
Yeah. Perfectly reasonable. Again, I want to see it. And actually, I pulled it up. The shape of that, of each, I'll call it a holder, because really it's holding the carbide bit. Mm-hmm. It's not consistent from the handle to the tip. It actually tapers down a little bit. All of them do.
Yes.
A little differently. Not that really matters. That just means it's getting a little thinner. And the shorter ones don't look like they do them as much. I want to use them. And I say that I probably bought an Easy Wood tool before I ever used one. Mm-hmm. But now having one, I kind of want to try it out before I would dig in a little deeper.
Right. If you realize they're the same thing, then you don't need to duplicate what you already have.
Yeah, and I really – but that being said, like I don't have the full gamut of the Easy Wood ones. I only have the square tip, so maybe I'd get a rougher or a finisher, which would be the round one, or the detailer, which would be the pointed one.
Well, let me ask you, and I'm going to put you on the spot here. People are listening, Sean.
Go.
I know that you were willing to drive across town – to help Prosciutto learn how to use his lathe.
Guilty as charged.
So if I ever actually bite the bullet and get a lathe in here, I'm expecting you to come out to Long Island and show me how to do it.
I might be able to make that happen. I would be more than happy to make that happen, actually. Doesn't your dad have a lathe?
No, he actually doesn't.
Oh, so this is a tool that's totally new to the Plotkey family.
Yes, I suppose it would be. He has threatened to get a lathe, but he's got other things going on right now, and he's not spending a lot of the shop time these days.
Yeah, scheduling may be important, but I would be more than happy to help my co-host get over the learning curves.
I do appreciate that, and I would certainly help you work around my busy schedule.
Yes, and mine as well. Anyway.
All right.
If we can continue
onto the
pointed conversations, Andy Klein, another former,
he's a friend of the show. I hear
friend of the show, guest of the show, and also a collaborator with Mark, the Wood Whisperer, Spagnolo. He put out a video.
Did you know that Mark is Phil Pinsky's best friend?
That's not true.
I've best heard friends, it is.
Really.
I'm sorry. Please go on. I don't mean to derail this conversation.
No, that's very interesting. I'll have to find out more. So Andy Klein put out a video titled and describing how to break one of the Andy Klein Wood Whisperer wood thread taps, which I thought was very interesting. Mm-hmm. But I'm guessing people might have been complaining about it. And the design of them is somewhat fragile.
Is it?
I suppose.
I saw the videos when they were first introduced, and we talked with Andy about them.
Yeah.
But I will admit to not having seen the video of him breaking them.
Right.
It strikes me as I'm going to blame the user. Like, these don't. Yes. They're steel, for God's sakes. Compared to wood, they shouldn't break.
So the thing is, though, they made it easy. The design of it is brilliant. I want to get some, although I don't ever tap wood. So that's why I didn't jump on it right away. But what they did was smartly made the shaft of the bit smaller than the cutting head of the bit.
That would seem to make sense.
It makes sense because now it's clear of any of any interference when you're drilling down and you're tapping a hole deeper than the threads are, which can commonly happen, I suppose.
Uh-huh.
But what it also does is makes it a little more fragile. And so the one he did, and he actually did snap it in his video, is a quarter inch one. So
which was the smaller of them?
I believe it's one of the smallest. I don't know the size range, but so what he did was, they make the operation, you know, easy enough to use with a hand drill. Uh-huh. So it's rapid and it doesn't have to be in a drill press. So now you're just taking the hand drill to whatever. And you're
right. And seeing Andy do the videos and talking to him, you can like literally do it at full speed. Just zip it in, zip it out with the hand drill, right?
But what he did in the video was hold the battery instead of the handle of the drill and it snapped.
Oh, hold on. He held the... So the battery, this is a typical battery-powered hand drill. So the battery's at the bottom of the handle?
Yes.
How does he pull the trigger?
Well, I think he had his other hand pulling the trigger.
So,
but he shifted the control and the pressing down force.
Okay, so he's not pushing and twisting his wrist to apply more pressure at the top end of the handle, so he's pushing parallel with the shank. He's literally pushing almost perpendicular and cranking the shank over.
And torquing it, yeah.
Okay.
He's bending it.
So I stand by my statement that it's user error. The people who snap them don't understand how to drill, for God's sakes. You got to snap a regular drill bit doing that. It's stupid.
100%. But I thought it was very interesting that he put out a video and said, this is how you break them.
Okay. You know what? Good for him as a developer of them. See, this is why he's good at this and I'm not. Because I would be out there telling people how stupid they were for not knowing how to drill. I'm sorry. I don't know where I am tonight, but I'm cranky. He just did this video saying, hey guys, don't do it this way. They'll break. So not only is Andy incredibly inventive in these things he comes up with, but he has the grace to actually show people how to do it right, which is more than I think I would have. So that's why I don't invent and sell things.
Yeah. Here. I'm half in the same way. Not 100%, but I totally get it. Yeah, if a multitude of people said, these things suck, they break, I'm like, what are you doing? Like, why are you doing it that way? It's obvious that you should. Anyway, but it's good for you to check it out. Look up Andy Klein on YouTube and see him. And honestly, I've heard nothing but good things about those things.
Mm, absolutely. So did you see the video that Nick Carruthers did? He built this like crane.
No.
It's like a big hoist. And he's used it. He's restoring what has to be at least an 8, if not 12-inch old school joiner. It's this big cast iron beast. And he built this big hoist that's like a U-shape, inverted U, that he's using to pick it up and move it around the shop.
Really?
Yeah. And I saw he was posting all these pictures of him making this big hoist thing. I think he calls it a crane. And when he was like, I'd seen the hoist around on the interwebs for a couple weeks. And then he came out with this video testing the taps. And what he did was the hoist has two feet that are, I'm going to guess they're somewhere in the ballpark of 3 foot long each. I'm not 100% sure. And each of them has, I think, three, maybe four swivel casters on it so that when he's got the joiner hung from the bottom of the hoist, he can move it around. And the way he attached the casters to the bottom side of these feet was by tapping the feet with the Wood Whisperer threaded taps. And then screwing in bolts. And he's got a video about, you know, how he did it and then demonstrating that all the casters stay on wonderfully while he's got the weight of this thing swinging around. And I don't know if he says how heavy it is, but knowing how heavy my joiner is and mine has more sheet metal than cast, I'm going to say that the joiner he's moving around is probably somewhere between 800 and 1,000 pounds.
Oh, wow.
Now it's, you know, there's either six or eight casters, and each caster is four screws. So it's not like a screw is holding 1,000 pounds, but not screws, they're bolts actually, but the bolts, it's really good attachment, I guess, is the long and short of it. So as long as you know how to hold a drill properly, I think you're going to have a lot of success with these taps.
Yeah, for sure. I think they absolutely look like they work fantastically. Again, I don't have an application currently that I could think of tapping wood, but I understand there are plenty of them. So
yeah,
if you use it, go for it.
I will admit that when they first came out with them, I was like, oh, tapping wood. I've never had to tap wood. But in seeing them, I've seen a lot of really cool things that have been done with the threaded taps, such as attaching these feet, the wheels to the feet, rather. And that's pretty cool because, like, the feet are – there are a couple boards laminated together. But if you were to use, like, a bolt and put a nut on the other end of it, it would have to be – it'd probably have to be a 6 or 8 inch long bolt. Whereas now, by going with, like, a 3 inch bolt and threading it in, he's getting what's probably just as good attachment with much less hardware.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, there's definite advantages to that. I just –
I wonder if Timber Strand would tap.
Oh, I bet it would. Why not? The only thing is the stuff that's not glue.
you mean the wood?
Yeah, it's fairly soft.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, but you know, by all accounts, I mean, most of the time you'd be grabbing glue.
That's interesting. Okay, I have to keep that in mind.
Yeah, I'm curious. I'll be watching. So last thing I'll bring up is probably fairly insignificant, but we're on Instagram. But
hold on. You're underselling that. I think this is the most important change to the social medias since I joined Twitter. I'll go that far.
The Modern Woodworkers Association is on Instagram. Yes. Finally. And now we need to figure out what it is to be on Instagram. Because I'm no good at it.
It's pictures of like fish tacos, right?
Well, so or if you look at MWA_podcast on Instagram, you find out a picture of me, an artistically shown picture of a finished door when it was still in the Sawhorses. Or the carved door of the cottage that we stayed in this past weekend.
There are three posts because I follow the MWA on Twitter.
I think there's only two.
Because of that ridiculous algorithm they have, I've only seen one of the posts.
Oh, there's two.
Okay. Well, that's still twice as many as I've seen.
So at this point, we have 28 followers. It's been live for less than 5 days.
That's not too bad.
So that's not so bad.
No, for two pictures?
Yeah.
Well, I will certainly help you with the posting, and I think we can. I don't want to directly copy what Wood Talk is doing, and I think that since we're not going to have pictures of Cremona in our feed, we won't be directly copying them. But I think that I wouldn't use it to directly promote or post the things that you or I are individually doing, because I think we're both doing that already. But in terms of communal things, I think it's a great place to share, and I think that we'll certainly do that. And probably just the stupid kind of behind-the-scenes amusing stuff, because why not?
Oh, absolutely.
And Actually, if there's more you want to talk about, please do. But as we lead out of that, I want to talk about what I will use it to share.
Go.
Well, this week, I'm saying this week, I've been checking like once a week, and yesterday I noticed it was live, so maybe it was last week. But Fine Woodworking Live 2018 is open for business, and you can register for the show. It will be April 20th through the 22nd in Southbridge, Massachusetts. I reserved my hotel room on Monday, and yesterday I received a save the date notice from my cousin who decided to get married, and it's the weekend after this. And
oh,
when
you're
I saw
lucky
that it was in April, I was like, oh my God, don't. So it's the weekend after this. So anyone who's going to Matt Heller's wedding, it's the weekend after this. You can do both. Don't worry about it.
And this is the same venue that it was last year.
Exactly.
Right?
It is the same venue in Southbridge, Massachusetts. Now, I have for years been talking about how the classes at these conferences, and by these I mean Fine Woodworking Live, Weekend with Wood, Woodworking in America, the classes at these conferences are about 80% wonderful and about 20% I could have done without that class. But the classes are of consistent high quality among the different conferences. And for the first 2 years of Fine Woodworking Live, which was 12 and 13, I believe, they took a hiatus for a few years.
Right.
They got the classes right, but they got the venues wrong. And we were staying locations that weren't walkable. Like the very first one, I was staying on the other side of the thruway. So the venues were less than ideal. Anyone who's listened to the podcast for a long time, I've ranted about how terrible some of the locations of WIA were, Kansas City, and talked about how wonderful some of the WIA locations are, such as Cincinnati. And that really doesn't reflect on the cities. It reflects on the venues they chose within those cities. So the reason I give all that history is to say that this venue in Southbridge, Massachusetts is a good venue. There's a conference center attached to the hotel. Last year, I was lucky enough to carpool and share a room with Dr. Wilbur Pan, good friend of ours who will be coming up. We haven't set an exact date, but he has a new video out with Popwood and a book coming out. I don't think the book is out yet. I could be mistaken on that, but we're absolutely going to be talking to him soon about the video and the book and what it was like to hang out in Frank Klaus's shop to shoot the video. And just about, you know, what he's doing in general, because frankly, I like Frank Klaus, but Wilbur is cooler. The reason I mentioned driving up there with him is because we parked the car. Now, let me backtrack. It's a Friday through Sunday event. WIA is Thursday through Sunday. WIA, you register Thursday afternoon. The conference itself starts Friday, runs Friday, Saturday into Sunday morning.
You're right. Was it that way?
Yeah.
Okay.
Fine Woodworking Live, you register Friday afternoon. Classes are Saturday and Sunday. Now, it sounds like it's a day less. In reality, it's a little less than that because, and I say this with all due respect, Sunday at Woodworking in America is a throwaway day. There are years when I have left early Sunday morning, and there are years when I've stayed for every class on Sunday. And the classes on Sunday mostly are repeats of other classes. They are sparsely attended compared to Friday and Saturday at the conference. Mm-hmm. If you're around, it's absolutely worth going to. But if you have to leave and don't make it, it's really not a big loss.
I have yet to attend any Sunday of a WIA.
Well, I've just summed it up for you. Whereas Sunday at Fine Woodworking Live is a real conference day. Now, it ends at like 2, where Saturday ends at like 5. So it's a little bit shorter, but it's still a real conference day. And there are new classes going on, and everyone was there until the end of the day on Sunday at Fine Woodworking Live. Now, perhaps that means that for those of you who need to travel, it's not a viable event because you don't have all day Sunday to travel. And I'm sorry if that's the case. I luck out because it's only like a 3-hour drive for me and I can do it. And that's not going to be true for everyone. So hopefully that staying later on Sunday works. But Friday night, there's a social event. Saturday, there are classes all day long. There's a banquet Saturday night. Sunday, there are classes until early afternoon. It's a very worthwhile conference. And the venue they have in Southbridge, Massachusetts, I forget what the hotel's called, but it's a hotel and a conference center in one building. Admittedly, there is not that much away from the building, but you don't need to leave the building. Mm. Wilbur and I arrived at like 1 o'clock on Friday. We hooked up with some guys we know. We went out to lunch. That was the last time we used the car until Sunday, was going out to lunch. And quite frankly, we could have eaten lunch in the hotel. It wasn't, but we had the car. Nothing had started yet. We figured, let's go out to lunch. So it's a nice conference in that you're there the whole time. And it's not that the hotel is fantastic. It's very nice, but it's something to it doesn't make or break the conference. But the fact that you're there with the woodworkers all weekend long is, in my book, what makes it a successful conference.
That seems fun.
It was an absolute hoot. So again, Fine Woodworking Live is open for registration. It will be April 20th through the 22nd of 2018 in Southbridge, Massachusetts. It is roughly equidistant between New York and Boston. So if you have to fly, I think both cities work. You can also fly into Providence or Hartford and drive in, but flights to those two cities are not nearly as easy to do. It is not a cheap conference in that early bird registration is $495 and full registration is $500, it's not a $5 difference. It's it's $545. It's a $50 difference. Your registration includes here's the thing that strikes me as about $100-$150 more than WIA. It's been a year or two since it's been a year since the last WIA. Off the top of my head, I don't remember what WIA cost. I think it was about $300.
So this 300 is, to 400. I don't actually quite remember.
So let's say it's $150 difference. But here's the thing. This includes not just the classes, but it also includes your food.
Oh.
So dinner on Friday. I'm saying this. I'm looking at the website right now, and it says all-inclusive breakfast, lunches, wine, beer, get together, Saturday evening banquet. So dinner on Friday might not be included because Friday's just registration. So if I'm misspeaking here, I apologize. I don't remember if dinner on Friday was included, and I'm talking now. I'm not going to go crazy looking through the website. But breakfast Saturday, lunch Saturday, dinner Saturday, breakfast Sunday, a snack Sunday for lunch, all included. Literally the only money we spent other than buying tools while we were at the event was buying drinks at the bar Friday and Saturday night after the event was over. So when you factor in buying yourself meals at WIA, and what do they charge for the banquet on Saturday at WIA? $20-$30, something like that?
I thought it might have even been 50, but yeah. What, not terrible.
Whatever it is, by the time you factor in all the food, I'm going to say it's probably a wash in terms of the expense. You could be really, you could be really thrifty in what you buy and make WIA a little bit cheaper, but I'm going to say it's probably a wash. And again, because it's not just like at WIA, there's basically two hotels we all stay at that are directly across the street from the conference center. Mm-hmm. This is only one hotel. It doesn't hold everyone, so reserve your hotel room sooner than later. but it's literally the same building. And you're hanging out with other woodworkers, with the magazine staff, with the presenters the entire weekend. It's a thoroughly good weekend. And if going to a woodworking convention wasn't enough reason to spend a weekend somewhere, to boot, this is in New England.
Yeah. It sounds like a blast. I hope to attend.
I'll offer you the same offer I will everyone, is if you fly into New York on Friday morning, I'll pick you up and drive you there.
Sounds fantastic. We would be remiss if we didn't remind everyone that Woodworking Fighting Cancer is going on right now.
Yes, and let's back up because we can use a transition that Mark will be teaching at Fine Woodworking Live this year.
Oh, there you go. I didn't even realize that.
Yes, he will. He's going to be teaching. I don't understand why anyone would want to do this, but he's teaching, of all things, power carving.
Oh, he has a background in that, right?
Little bit, but I don't know. It's not really in my interest, so I probably won't attend that class.
Yeah, you probably not, huh?
Nah, I don't think so.
Huh. Interesting. But yeah, if you haven't checked it out yet, please go. It's a very, very simple project this year. I don't have any plans to do it yet, but I might. But it, you know, the money they raise for cancer research is fantastic every time they do it. So yeah, check out Mark's website, check out woodworkersfightingcancer.com.
And when you say it's a relatively simple project, what the project is a small frame.
Yes.
With something put in it. I think Mark put some Nintendo figurines in it.
And also Christmas ornaments or like small Christmas things.
As people have been completing them, he's been sharing them, and I've seen lots of different things. I saw one that he shared today that was some military paraphernalia, and it was from someone who'd served. It looked very moving, quite frankly. But what it is the small frame. It's almost kind of like a shadow box. Is that what they're called? Shadow boxes?
Yes,
memory box. Shadow box.
Shadow boxes.
The whatever you have, the memorabilia, for lack of a better description, is set within the frame, and then the frame is filled with epoxy. So they're set within the epoxy, and it's a fairly simple build. I'm thinking, by the time you deal with glue ups and stuff, I think it's probably a couple days, not just an all day project. But it's not more than a day's work. But you have a couple glue ups and waiting for the resin to dry and stuff. So I don't think you're going to accomplish it within a single day worth of working on it. But it's less than a day's work of actual work. You just have dry times.
Yes.
And you know what? Donate. Who cares if you build the frame?
Absolutely.
I mean, if you build the frame, you help promote Mark and the event. So go for it. But it's not a frame that I have any desire to build right now. But I'll give some money, and you should just give some money because it's an incredibly worthwhile cause.
Yeah, absolutely. Go for it.
All right.
Now, let me ask you something, Diami.
Yes. Yes, Sean.
How do you feel about farmhouse tables?
Well, I think there was so much going on in the on the interwebs and in the community that perhaps we should table a discussion of farmhouses and tease the listener and talk about that next time.
I like that. That sounds good. We did spend a fair amount of time on all things woodworking community wise.
But with that, as we've been talking about what's going on out there, I'm sure you've been enjoying a nice drink.
I have. I don't know if this comes out your way, but Hoppin' Frog, it's an Ohio brewery.
No, I know them.
Yeah, they're just around Akron, Ohio, and they produce some pretty amazing brews most of the time. They're known for I think it's Boris and Doris, and Boris is a Oh, now I'm going to Boris is a barrel. No. And Doris is a double oatmeal. Oatmeal raisin. Oh, it's Boris is a oatmeal raisin imperial stout. And Doris is the double of a oatmeal raisin imperial stout. Wow. I think it's raisin. I think. And what I picked up, and that all that aside, what I picked up tonight is their barrel aged double pumpkin ale. Because it's fall and it's cold as crap outside, and you need a little something to warm you up.
How is it?
It's good. It really is good. It's a little heavy. It comes in about 8.6% or so. 8.4 as I look at it. But it's very, very well done. It's not too heavy, not too sweet, not too spicy. It's just a nice seasonal pumpkin ale. If you get Hop and Frog, which I honestly don't know how far they go.
I have. It's not a brewery I've ever heard of.
Yeah. But if I come to either finish your spackle or teach you how to turn, I might bring you some.
Okay. Well, unless you're coming next Wednesday, you're not going to be able to finish my spackle.
Okay.
But
go for it.
No, if I actually break down and get a lathe at some point, you will be coming out here. So we'll enjoy some nice toasts while we
have. I mentioned how close I live to Dave Picciuto?
I don't care.
No. I will make accommodations. What do you got?
If you want to get into power carving, I'll come out to Ohio and I'll show you.
Yeah.
Could I ask a question before we get into my drink? Is
sure.
When did pumpkin flavored beers overtake Oktoberfests?
I don't know. Seem to be everywhere, don't they?
They're absolutely everywhere. And not that Oktoberfest is not popular now, but I would almost universally prefer an Oktoberfest to a pumpkin beer.
I think what's happened is Oktoberfests now come out in September.
Okay, so do the pumpkin beers.
Yeah, I guess they do.
I don't know that I've seen any difference in when the two are released, one versus one or the other.
I don't know. It probably comes down to the brewing process. And what it takes to make a pumpkin brew or pumpkin slash yam slash whatever the hell they use to make them a different.
Right. I only know the very beginning parts of how to brew beer, but my understanding is that ales are the easiest type of beer to brew. And most of the pumpkin and yam flavored ones are ales. Whereas a true Oktoberfest is a Marzen, which is a lot closer to a lager, which my understanding is the actual hardest type to brew.
I think I would agree with that. My experience is very, very, very minimal. I think because of how popular microbrewing or craft brewing, call it what you will, is at this point, what's easy is more numerous. Mm-hmm. I think that's why IPAs came out in such force for such a long time.
Yeah.
But I don't know. But yeah, you don't see a whole bunch of Oktoberfest, although I've had a few this season. Everyone's doing pumpkins too.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I'm just going to say, if you go out there and you find a good Oktoberfest, enjoy it.
Absolutely. Go for it.
What I am recommending this fortnight is the Cambridge Brewing Company, the CBC, established in 1989, their Triple Threat Belgian-style Trappel. And I've heard it pronounced triple, and those people are wrong. It's Trappel. That's my opinion. And it is a very good Belgian triple. Now, how strong was your pumpkin beer?
8.4.
8.4. This is 10.
Yeah. Yeah, a triple will do that.
Which, for a triple, it strikes me as not particularly high. However, when I was drinking it and not paying attention to what it was, it has a touch of bite to it, but it's also got a nice sweet hint to it, almost like a regular Saison, not a double or triple. I'm going to say that I liked it. It's got a nice, rich sweetness to it with a little bit of bite at the end, but nothing too overpowering. It leaves the sweetness. a very good Trapel.
No, very good.
Yeah.
That would be nice to try. I enjoy a triple every once in a while. Every once in a while.
I've really grown on the Belgian styles. I did not used to like them. And as my palate has matured, I have grown to appreciate them and their rich, complex flavors.
And they really are. That sounds snooty, but they honestly are.
They really are.
Yeah. And, I enjoy that as well. I actually went into the beer store this evening and, I was looking for something a little something, but this big pumpkin, it's in a big bomber of a bottle. So, I had a full 16 ounces of it while we were recording tonight. It was good, but, I definitely eyed a couple of the German styles, the Belgian styles, and I like to visit those every once in a while. But anyway, that just about closes up the show, doesn't it?
It does. It does. I believe that wraps it up.
That would wrap it up. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to our show on iTunes or Google Play Music. Just search for the Modern Woodworkers Association. Then you'll be sure never to miss any of our exciting episodes. While you're there, please leave us a review.
Thank you for listening to the Modern Woodworkers Association. If you like the show, be sure to visit Modern Woodworkers Association, where you can catch show notes up to about April of 2017. you can also follow the MWA on Twitter at MWA_national. You can like the MWA on Facebook or circle Modern Woodworkers Association Google+. Let me just take a sidebar here, too. I realize that we harp a lot on Google+, and most lay people think Google+ is dead. And I'll be the first to admit that the conversation there anywhere on Google+ is not what it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
But that being said, in terms of the building and crafting of a social platform, I think it's one of the better built platforms. So if you want to share there, I'll engage you. So I'm not willing to just cut that thing off because I think mechanically it's rather nice. But the best thing you can do, short of sharing us on any social network, the best thing you can do is to just tell a friend and grab their phone and download a podcasting app and download our podcast and play it for them and tell them they can't get up until it's finished. That's the best thing.
Absolutely. We do need to add to that section. And we'll mention it again a little later, but, now that we're on Instagram.
Oh, yes.
So we're not only MWA on Facebook or on Google+ or _national on Twitter. We're MWA, just to keep it different, MWA_podcast on Instagram.
And I think that in all fairness, we should stop hawking the Google+ community and talk about the Instagram page, because that's where the kids are.
It is. It is. There's more there.
As an old man, it kills me to say that, but that's where the kids are.
I heard a tech podcast this week that mentioned Google+ and how nice it is, but it just doesn't seem to be used by anybody anymore.
Exactly.
And Google isn't putting a whole lot of attention to them.
Now, every once in a while, the app gets updated, which amazes me.
Yeah. Yeah. But I would not be shocked if they rolled it into something else or just cut it off immediately.
Yeah. They seem to have stripped all the really popular features out of it, such as photos.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But anyway, this is perhaps not the appropriate place to discuss the varying commitments that big companies make to their social networks.
There you go. So in leaving you, I'm Sean Wisniewski of The Corner Workshop. I'm at SeanW78 on Instagram and Twitter, and I'm just Sean Wisniewski on Facebook.
And I am Diami Plotke of ThePenultimateWoodshop.com. You can find me at ModernWoodworkersAssociation.com. You can find me on Pinterest at Penultimate Woodshop. you can find me on Instagram. And frankly, if you want to talk, find me on Twitter. I'm at Diami Plotke.
There you go.
So.
And you can always find us, again, we'll just mention one more time, MWA_national on Twitter, Facebook.com/Modern Woodworkers, or Instagram.com/MWA_podcast.
Absolutely. And with that, why don't you go take a piece of timber strand and see if you can dye it to look like oak? And then put a UV finish on it and put it in front of the window.
There you go.